From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's called The Gallows. Here's what's happening. A very strange story. Trading halted for more than 2 hours on the New York Stock Exchange floor Wednesday after an internal technical issue was detected, which then set off speculation that a cyber glitch at United Airlines and then a temporary online outage at the Wall Street Journal newspaper were all connected. The White House spokesperson Josh Earnest and President Obama had been briefed on the glitch that took out trading on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange by White House counterterrorism and Homeland Security advisor Lisa Monaco. They say that despite indications that it was not a cyber breach, the administration was keenly aware of the risk that exists in cyberspace right now, no doubt. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson tried to allay fears, saying that it appears from what we know at this stage that the malfunctions at United and at the stock exchange were not the result of any attack. Let's check in with the expert on the Internet, of course, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, I've always said there are no coincidences, but this is bizarre to have these three episodes occur today.
Yeah, I mean, I've been checking into this today, and you always have to be a little bit suspicious whenever there's a holiday, because it seems like a lot of stuff breaks down the week following holidays.
Yes.
Just because they had the weekend to kind of run off on their own sometimes with less than normal staffing. As far as I can tell, there's nothing particularly scary about these, except perhaps incompetent technology management in some ways. The stock exchange apparently was involved in, from what I've heard anyway, there haven't been official pronouncements yet, was apparently involved in a rolling update of their systems. Why they do that in the middle of the week, I don't know. And it blew up. It just didn't work. And that happens a lot. That's why you usually try to do these things in the middle of the night, when you don't have trading going on and things like that. The United Airlines one appears to have probably been an overload condition where there was some kind of problem with some hardware and the reservations kept coming in and the system didn't roll over properly. And the Wall Street Journal website, who knows, that site goes down all the time. I mean, it's kind of incompetent.
And then there was another story, Lauren. A teenager involved in a series of high-profile cyber attacks has been convicted for crimes in Finland, apparently found guilty of 50,700 instances of aggravated computer break-ins. How do you do that?
Yeah, it takes some time. They probably, what they did is he was apparently operating a botnet. He had some large number of machines he'd taken over, and I suspect they counted every instance of everything that was done with those remote systems, which were probably largely operating automatically and then feeding things back to him. They counted each of those probably as a charge. What's really interesting is that for all of that, he got a 2-year suspended prison sentence.
he lucked out on that one, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he was younger when he did it. It does seem a little bit light considering there was credit card fraud and such involved, but that's the deal he managed to get.
Well, he'll probably go to work with the government and some sources like our friend Kevin Mitnick did.
Well, he sounds like he might have some real talent, so the government probably won't take him.
You got it. Lauren, thank you so much. And Microsoft is going to lay up to 7,800 people off globally. Most of the jobs are within its smartphone hardware division there. It's a hot summer for the gun industry. Background checks for gun sales spiked 11% in June compared to last year, making it the busiest June ever, according to the FBI's background check data. Last month, the FBI conducted nearly 1.53 million background checks, which are required for all in-store purchases, but not for sales at gun shows or between individuals. Larry Pratt, of course, was just on with me, is the executive director of the Gun Owners of America for more than 30 years. Larry, why the increase in June? What do you think's going on?
Nobody's been able to figure it out. The president, who has often been the salesman of the month or of the year, really can't get credit for this one. It just seems that Americans are more and more into buying guns. There are, and it's interesting that the more of us who own guns per capita, the violent crime rate continues to go down.
Well, there's no doubt about that. So would you expect the other months to go up too as well?
It just could. If we don't have any particular reason for why this month's increase, it could just be that Americans have finally decided that can't have enough guns.
You got it. Larry, thank you so much. June sales going through the roof for gun sales. The true cost of an unhealthy lifestyle of little exercise, poor diet, and smoking has been quantified by scientists who found that it can reduce lifespan, get this, by 23 years. People who develop largely preventable conditions like heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes are cutting their life short by decades, according to a 50-year study. Take care. Well, it's not easy being a vampire. It's even harder to come out of the coffin, as they say, to a physician or therapist for fear that they will misinterpret the habit of ingesting the blood of willing donors or succumb to stereotyping, according to a study there. Research by DJ Williams, the director of social work at Idaho State University, indicates that people who identify themselves as real vampires needing others' blood to gain energy would not disclose their practices to those in helping professions and risk reactions like ridicule, disgust, and possible diagnosis of a mental illness. Well, Father Sebastian, perhaps the most central personality of the modern vampire, is with us. Father, what do you think of that study? If you agree with it or not?
I find that what's really interesting about this is that a lot of things that have not been accepted in mainstream society are really being looked into. The people who identify as vampires are really a unique lot, and it's kind of hard to scientifically prove something like this, that you have a, there's no evidence of someone who needs a requirement for drinking blood. There's no scientific evidence behind it. And the people that do need it are pretty rare.
And I know, Father, talking to you over the years, that the people you know in the vampire community, they're pretty open about it, aren't they?
Well, they're open within the vampire community. But the thing is there's so many people who love the vampire aesthetic and lifestyle. It's kind of like a philosophy for them. Then the people that are the blood drinkers and the energy vampires are actually a very small minority, but they're very serious.
Well, they sure are. Father's website, by the way, Father Sebastian, you can track him at coasttocoastam.com's Twitter feed. John Greenwald, with his website, The Black Vault, broke a story yesterday that we had on coasttocoastam.com on our highlight, and it's still there for you, of an incredible story of 1971, a U.S. submarine possibly spotting a UFO. Take a look at some of the pictures at coasttocoastam.com. And the lead investigator in this incredible story joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Our colleague Jimmy Church called me and said, George, you have got to talk with Alex Mistretta about this incredible story that John Greenwald has on his The Black Vault. This is a story that happened around 1971 with a U.S. submarine. It's an incredible story by the Arctic about a UFO that the submarine sailors spotted. You've got to talk about it. So we've got pictures on at coasttocoastam.com, and I want to bring Alex in on this because he's the lead investigator researcher on. Alex, this has got to be one of the most incredible UFO stories I've seen in a long, long time. Thanks for coming on at such a short notice.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem whatsoever.
How did this story come about? How did you get the information? And then tell me about this admiral, which is a key figure in this story.
Right. Well, I have some sources in Europe in the intelligence community that I've used in the past on other cases, and they just informed me simply that some pictures were coming out in the magazine that I really should take a look at. You know, I've heard this before, so at first I didn't think much of it. I took a look at the pictures and was immediately impressed. And at that point, I decided I'm going to take this case. This is mine. I want it. And I'm in, right?
You are.
And the story, and I speak French, by the way, so I was able, you know, which really helped in this
case.
That
did help, yeah.
Yeah. And so the story kind of goes like this. An anonymous source released his pictures about a couple weeks ago, claiming that these were taken from a U.S. Navy submarine, the USS Trepang SSN 674, in March of 1971, somewhere in the Arctic Circle near between Iceland and Jan Mayen Island, which is an island owned by Norway. And he also released the name of an admiral that was on board the ship, the Admiral Dean Reynolds Sackett. And that's it. That's all the information that was on there. So I decided to start, you know, checking some facts. And as it turns out, obviously the submarine was real, and I was able to confirm that they were indeed at that location in March of 1971, and that the admiral on board was actually the correct guy. And as it turns out, I found the guy's email and his phone number and talked to him today, or more precisely, Steve Murillo talked to him today. Steve is somebody I work with. He was head of MUFON Los Angeles for 10 years, and I was the director of investigations for him for 10 years.
Okay.
So we still work together. And Steve's a Navy guy, so I figured that being a Navy guy, talking to a Navy guy might be a kind of a good idea. You know?
So he found the admiral. The admiral's real. He's a real
Absolutely.
Deal. And what did he say? Did he have recollection of this case, or was he afraid to talk? What happened, Alex?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. You know, so Steve called him and introduced himself, you know, and then he's like, look, I got a kind of a strange request. Your name came up in association with this case that, you know, my friend Alex Mastretta is working on. And so I told him the story, you know, and asked him, is this true? And so the guy, the Admiral Sackett, was like, I can confirm I was there on the sub at that location, 1971, but I only saw ice.
I only saw ice.
And so it was intriguing because, you know, I've questioned a lot of people in my time, and usually as soon as you mention UFOs, there's always some kind of comment as it relates to that subject. Dismissive or interested, but he pretty much ignored the subject completely.
Was it like he was under order still not to say anything?
Well, probably you have to assume, you know, obviously this is real. You have to determine that. He's under a security oath, which I understand and respect. But, you know, people in that position are very cool-headed, and he was very a matter of fact. You know, he paused maybe a split second when Steve asked him the question, and that was pretty much it.
I was looking at the photographs over the last day or so, Alex, and some of them look like they may be above water, and then there are a few that look like they could be underwater, but I wasn't sure. What were you able to ascertain about them?
Yeah, the one of the pictures, the object is just coming out of the water, and the others are all above water.
And there's a couple different shapes, too.
Correct, yeah. And, you know, I've gone through this, maybe 100 times in the last few days. And, you know, we can determine if part of it is actually the same object. It's just a different angle, or maybe it's changing size, which, you know, obviously would be unusual. But
any idea, Alex, who took the photographs?
So far, none. You know, part of this idea was to get this as public as possible, and hopefully somebody would come forward with a little more info. And actually, the Admiral was actually gracious enough that he agreed to take a look at the pictures if we sent it to him by email. So I'm still kind of, you know, have some hopes on that front. But as of right now, I'm just trying to track down the rest of the crew, and hopefully, you know, someone can come forward.
Oh, my gosh.
If you
could find the person who took the photographs, that would be incredible. I would guess it's possible, doubtful, but possible that the Admiral maybe didn't even know anything about this.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibility. I mean, first of all, maybe it's a hoax. Two,
maybe.
You know, security belt, you can't talk. I understand that. Three, you know, these pictures might be legitimate. It might not even come from this sub. I did some research. Apparently, there was also another sub that was in the area a month earlier, the USS Skate SSN 578. So I just got around to that today, so we haven't had a chance to track that down.
Now, this was in the Arctic, of course. Back again, as you said, in 1971. I'm going to spell the name of the submarine for those buffs who want to look this up. It's USS Trepang, and SSN 674 is its identifier.
Correct.
And my gosh, you know, it's a nuclear sub. There must have been about 100 to 200 sailors on that. All you need is a couple, Alex, to come forward and say, yeah, we saw these things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all, you know.
Where do you go from here with this story? Because I know you're not going to give it up. Jimmy said you're one of the best investigators he knows.
That's nice of him. Now I've tracked down, I have a list of actually some of the crew members that I was able to put together. So one by one, we're trying to find and contact these guys. Obviously, 40, 50 years after the fact, it's not always easy.
Alex, in all the cases you've looked at in your career as a researcher, investigator, how would you rate this one?
One of the top ones. Top three, potentially, obviously.
And, of course, John Greenwald did a great service, I think, to everybody in the community going with his story, too, on his The Black Vault.
Yeah, I've known John for a long time, and, he saw some of my posts on Facebook, which is where I initially broke the story, which is because I guess that's how it's done these days. And John, kind of decided to put on his website. And he's going to do a freedom information search as well on that case. So we have a long way to go. But
you don't have the original photographs, so these are just photographs that were published, right?
Correct, yes. I don't, yeah. Only the French magazine supposedly has the original photographs.
I mean, for what I could see, they look pretty authentic. I don't know what we're looking at here. But they don't look doctored at all to me.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I can't comment on, obviously, the relationship between the sub and, if that's real. But the pictures, I have looked up hundreds of pictures throughout my time at MUFON and beyond, And I've seen a lot of doctored photos, obviously. And these look pretty damn good,
Yeah. Well, in coming on the heels of that story on May 5th, those pictures of the so-called alien slides, and everybody who has now looked at them say, no, these aren't aliens, for sure. We need something in the UFO community. We need something like this to really get our teeth into, don't we?
Yeah, that's actually, John and I were talking about that today, that we need a few more of these cases. There's such a stigma associated with this field, and, the Roswell issue really didn't help.
Hey, Alex, in the couple minutes we have left, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in all of this.
Yeah, like I said, I was the director of investigations for MUFON for, 10 years. And then I've been working in the UFO field for about 15 years. I also do a lot of my work in parapsychology and cryptozoology. I wrote a book a couple years ago, kind of went full-time in this field.
And sounds like you love it.
I breathe, I live this every day, It's an important subject, I feel. We need people out there.
Has anybody tried to estimate the size of these objects at all? Were you able to do that by looking at these pictures?
No, obviously they appear huge to me, and I've sent these out to a special effects guy in Hollywood, a top guy that's going to help me out, hopefully.
Because this is relatively a new story. I mean, honestly, I guess we could say it's breaking over the last couple days, at least in the United States.
Oh, yeah. I personally didn't even see the pictures till last week.
Oh, my
gosh. So I jumped on it, right away, so before somebody else got to.
What kind of reaction are you getting from those in the community?
Honestly, I thought at first I kind of assumed that it was going to be like, you were like cool and kind of, it's going to last 2 days. And it's been, I wasn't prepared for how it was going to blow up. obviously, you have to watch on the internet. There's a lot of negative and nasty comments. But for the most part, people are super interested. And I've seen articles in Italy about the pictures and in the UK. So the more the better, the easier it's going to be to track down.
Well, they put your email address in this article on the Black Vault.
Yeah.
So I bet you're getting slammed with that.
Oh, yeah, I got and some good ones, some crazy ones.
How long do you think it'll take you to conduct a further investigation, maybe get more reaction from the Admiral on this story?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I would assume we'll get some reaction in the next few days. But, in terms of resolution, this could take weeks, this could take months, it could even take years. You never know when people are going to come forward, because now it's just a matter of having people respond, which is out of my hands,
But you're not going to let this go, are you?
No, I'm not. No. Otherwise, I wouldn't make this as public as I did. I've kept pretty quiet in the field up to this point, but I thought this was worth pursuing.
Alex,
publicly.
If for some reason there are any sailors who are on that submarine and they want to email you, do you want to give out your email address to them?
Absolutely.
Go ahead and spell it out for us.
Alex Mistretta, 1020@gmail.com. MISTTA.com.
And that's MISTTA. All right, Alex, thank you so much. Good luck. Good job, by the way. Take a look at the pictures at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, the battle between good and evil. And in a moment, we're going to talk about the light forces, the dark forces that are in this planet with Gordon Asher Davidson. So stick around for that. Hey, we have passed the 14,000 mark now on memberships with paranormaldate.com. Primarily in the United States and Canada. Canada's taken off like a rocket ship, by the way. So you can, too. Next goal, 15,000, and we can probably do that in the next couple days. So if you haven't signed up for it yet, please do so. It's free to sign up. Use coupon code George if you decide to stay there. So simply go to paranormaldate.com. That is it. And make sure you click your right country tab in the right-hand corner, paranormaldate.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Gordon Asher Davidson has a long career of active leadership and social change, simultaneously pursuing a very deep inner meditative life, culminating in a very powerful book of his called The Transfiguration of Our World. Now, his experience ranges from being the co-author of Practical Visionary and Spiritual Politics, which was a foreword written, by the way, by the Dalai Lama. He's the founding director of the Social Investment Forum, founding and co-directing a Washington, D.C. institute called the Center for Visionary Leadership, and he offers clients consulting in the area of transformation. And here is Gordon Asher Davidson on Coast to Coast. We need 100 people on the planet at least like you, Gordon. Somebody's enlightened. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. I'm trying to develop as many people along the same lines as possible. That's one of my goals.
Is it a constant battle between the light forces and the dark forces that are hitting us and bombarding us?
Well, I think you can frame it that way, and certainly that has been the history of our world for a very long time. But that's changing now, and the light forces are actually getting the upper hand. That's one of the things that I really want to share with people is the shifts that are going on in this great struggle that's been going on for millennia. And I think the question on everybody's mind is, are we going to make it through this current crisis in the world? And how did we get into this situation to begin with? And how are we ever going to resolve all the issues? And what does the future actually hold for us? And what does it look like? And that's the information that I've received through my meditations over the last 20 years and put it all together in this book. And I'm really working to help people see the really big picture. It's a very much of an overview. And starting with the sort of inner history of our world, this planet was created as a garden planet, as a place where we would all grow and flourish. But there was a group that came in here, as I'm sure you know about, of basically predatory aliens who came into this planet a very, very long time ago, millennia ago. And they were very experienced in exploiting planets and doing this takeover type of activity. But they were discovered by the light guardians of our planet, and it was a very long debate whether they should be allowed to remain or whether they should be removed at that time. And the decision was that they would be allowed to stay here and become part of our evolutionary process, so that we would, as humanity, be confronted with the choice of going down the dark side and becoming extremely selfish and greedy and exploitive, or choose the path of light and love and service and giving to others. That was an ongoing choice that we've been making all of throughout our history. And the whole idea is we learn from the karma of our choices, which is the better way, and hopefully then make better choices in the future. So this has been the situation we've had for a very long time.
And Gordon, let me ask you, though, these predatory extraterrestrials, were they misconstrued as fallen angels a long time ago, or is that something else?
that's one interpretation. I mean, there's so many interpretations of whatever has happened on this planet. You know, you can interpret it in many different ways. I don't think anyone who directly interacted with them or knew their ultimate motives or purposes would ever consider them to be angels. They were, you know, very, very predatory and basically live off of fear and human suffering. Mm. And their whole goal was to create as much difficulty and problems for humanity as possible so they could feed off of that energy. That sounds pretty macabre, but in fact, that's the way they function. So they've now, they were also really, there are of course also real angels that do exist, and there are, you know, plenty of them, are, and they have been interacting with humanity for a very long time. But this is a whole, it's kind of like the origins of what people know as the Cabal. This is where right. it all started. So what happened is they came in here. They had certain powers. They could telepathically influence and control people. They had a certain degree of ability for prevision, and they knew how to use certain kinds of techniques to really control and civilizations and systems. So they set up, through many different civilizations, ways of controlling the leadership, the priesthoods, the whatever was present, and ultimately turning them into very dark systems. And this has happened throughout our history, and it happened in Lemuria and Atlantis and other civilizations. And they've been very active all the way through up to the Second World War, where they were behind the whole outburst of negativity that came through the Axis powers in the war. But they were defeated at that time. In terms of all their human cooperators were eliminated or jailed, but they were only driven off of the physical plane onto the astral plane, and they were sealed up, like it's called sealing behind the door where evil dwells. And it was our task to prevent them from coming back out into our human world by not engaging in the kinds of practices and attitudes and energies of the dark greed and selfishness and all the rest. We were not successful at keeping that door closed. And so they did reemerge and continued and developed even further the systems of control, a lot of it through the banking system and through the control of politicians and all the rest, which we all know is very present today. However, this is the culminating point in all this was 9/11. 9/11 was a staged attempt to create an event that would create so much fear that they could install all these limitations on our democratic rights and freedoms, which they did through the Patriot Act, and then they wanted to invade the Middle East to get control of the oil in the Middle East. And that didn't turn out so well either. But the most important part of that was that as a result of 9/11, there was a huge unintended consequence. And that consequence was that because our Earth is a chakra in the body, a center within the body of the living being we know as the solar system, every planet is a chakra in the body of the solar system. And our solar system has been ready for quite some time to move on to a higher level of evolution, to move to a higher energy level, higher frequency, higher state of being. But because the Earth is one of its chakras and the condition of the Earth was under this dark control, our solar system could not progress. With the advent of 9/11, it became very clear to the solar being and to what's known as the Solar Council that this situation was going to prevent their forward evolution for a very long time. So there was a decision made at a solar level that the dark Cabal originators were going to be taken off the planet or turned to the light. And
now, were these Cabal leaders humans or extraterrestrials?
There's different levels of it, but the ones I'm talking about right now are the extraterrestrials.
All right.
The ones who came from outside. There were only 50 of them, the originators, but they developed a huge following, of course, of human beings. There was interbreeding with human beings also. But the originators, who were really the whole power and energy behind it, at that point, the decision was made that they would be removed, and the Solar Council gave permission to the galactic civilizations to remove them or turn them to the light. This was in 2002, and that process has been underway ever since, and they are now completely gone from this planet. There are no more extraterrestrial dark entities interfering with our evolution.
Well, that's a good thing. So when you said the forces of light seem to be getting brighter, basically, it's because of that, the eradication of those darker forces?
That's one of the results of what's happened, yes. But there are many other things. What's happening is, in addition to giving the galactic civilizations permission to remove the darker aliens, they also were given permission to increase the amount of light radiation to the Earth. And that has been going on steadily since 2002. And so we now have this uprising and awakening of consciousness and energy going on worldwide. You can see it, of course, everywhere. And it doesn't always turn out to the ideal result, but you can certainly see that the awakening is going on. Something is stimulating this tremendous uprising of consciousness on the planet. And their goal is to help us and support us to free ourselves of all of this control, all these control systems. The systems are still there because the human beings who are working with them are still trying to maintain those systems and keep the whole game going because, of course, they're benefiting tremendously from it. But it's getting more and more difficult because of all the pressure that they're under. The cabal is under pressure from the investigations and the exposing of many, many of their activities that have been hidden until now. They are under pressure from their own internal infighting because now that they don't have that kind of higher order leadership, many of them are, you know, kind of run away. They're fighting with each other. They're killing each other. There's a whole lot of stuff going on around that, and they are being indicted, and many of them are being killed and or committing suicide in some cases.
Jeez.
And this is all part of the tremendous pressure, and they're primarily under pressure from the breakdown of the financial system, which is their primary control mechanism, which has been for quite a long time now. That's how they've controlled.
And Gordon, when you were talking about this solar group, is it a spiritual group where, you know, they're in another dimension, or are we talking about something physical?
I'm talking really about a spiritual dimension, but it has a physical manifestation, of course, which is our solar system.
Sure.
But it's like everything else, it's a living being, the solar system. And it has a solar council, which is like the guiding council for all the decisions about how this being is going to evolve and unfold. And our Earth is a part of that system. It can't be anything else. And so when things happen on Earth that are directly causing the retardation of their evolution, then there has to be some kind of change made, and that's what has happened. And that's the fundamental, most important good news. And the other very important piece is we are not in this struggle to free ourselves from the cabal alone. We do have tremendous help from what is known as the Galactic Light Alliance. And they have been working very closely with many leaders on this planet directly and have developed a very clear plan on how we're going to make this transition from the current system we have, which is rapidly breaking down, into a whole new system that really reflects the kind of world we all really long for in our hearts.
That's a good thing, and it's probably long overdue, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is, and it's something that, you know, we as humanity, I mean, so many people have told me when I talk about this and give details and information about it, how much it gives them hope, because they didn't have any hope.
No.
The sense was that, you know, we're the way things go, if you extrapolate from the present, people don't see anything but disaster, and that's not really the case. We do have tremendous amount of other beings who are helping and supporting us, and I can give you very detailed examples of that.
Please, yeah.
So people don't think I'm just making this all up.
Yeah, no. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what happened was, as I'm sure you're aware of, there's been a tremendous amount of interference with the leadership in this world, the elected leaders, political leaders, financial leaders, and in cases that the cabal basically uses brutal and ruthless tactics to enforce their control, including, of course, assassination in many other things. And the leaders of the world know about all this, and they have known about it for a long time, and they didn't quite know really what to do about it. But what happened was, once the Galactics were given permission to have more active engagement with humanity, they came into contact with many of the world leaders, either through direct meetings or through internal, you know, sort of impressions. People get ideas, they get suggestions, that thoughts come to them in that way. So they begin to be aware that there is some higher possibility here. And the leaders have been gathered together several times and shown a lot of the plans of the cabal, which included, of course, trying to start a nuclear war between Israel and Iran, between the United States and Russia, on all that sort of that level. They've also tried to instigate massive epidemics. If you remember, the SARS virus was with this tremendous threat that was being put forward.
Which fizzled out, thank God, right?
Out. Well, the reason it fizzled out was because the Galactics neutralized it completely. And that's why it just went nowhere. And of course, they're doing the same with the radiation from Fukushima, because if there was not some kind of intervention there, the Pacific Ocean would be a radioactive sink at this point.
But do you think, Gordon, if two nations were going to launch nukes against each other, that, and we've heard rumors that, you know, missile silos have been shut down and everything else.
That's correct.
And we've got great witnesses, military
That's
folks.
Right.
Do you think
right.
they'd step in? They would step in and shut these down?
Absolutely. The part of the, what they call the Solar Decree that happened in 2002 was, there will be no nuclear exchanges or war whatsoever on this planet. That's done. It's not going to happen. It will not be allowed. And they certainly have the power to do that. As I'm sure the people you've interviewed on your show have verified that even some of the rockets that have been gone up recently, and you see that sometimes they don't work and they just mysteriously disintegrate. And I don't know why exactly what was maybe on those rockets or what the plans were behind them, but they have the capacity to definitely control that nuclear possibility. The other thing is that was part of the cabal's plan was they wanted to try to start this nuclear war in many different ways that they went about doing that. So that, and the plan was they wanted to reduce the population of the Earth by about 80%. And the way they were going to do this was they had these underground cities set up all around the world, as you probably know, and some of them were, you know, had a lot of people in them, 160, 170, 80,000 people in these cities. And they were going to hide in those cities when the nuclear exchange took place, and then after a year or two come out, and then they would be ruling a small terrorized population, and they would be the masters of the planet. Well, this was a very crucial major part of their plan. What happened was that the Galactics actually opened up a portal in these underground cities, and they pulled everything and everyone in those cities into another dimension. They weren't killed or harmed, but they were moved. And there are actually videos now showing the inside of these underground cities as completely empty.
Huh.
And they were filled with, you know, enough for people to go and live there for years, and all kinds of laboratories and activities, all sorts of things going on there. And the evidence for this is very interesting. One of the cities was located in Virginia, and one was outside of Denver. And the day that they actually did this, if you recall, there was an earthquake in Virginia that actually cracked the Washington Monument.
Right, a very rare earthquake,
extremely rare. There are never any earthquakes out there in Virginia. And a day or two later, there was an earthquake outside of Denver. Those are the two of the locations where they had these major underground cities. And by that activity, they actually closed them down. They're completely gone. and that was in terms of the plan for which they were intended, which actually indicates that, and at that point, the Cabal knew that they were in big trouble.
Hold on, Gordon. We're going to come back and chat more with you about this incredible story right here on Coast to Coast AM.